Welcome to Roundhouse Roulette, a Walker, Texas Ranger podcast. Each week, we recap and review one of the 200 existing Walker, Texas Ranger episodes, randomly selected by Roundhouse Roulette. I'm Evan Dalton, here with my brother Adam and our fellow crazy dude, Mr. Bob Leahy. What's new, guys?
Not much, man.
Doing good.
Yep, just hanging out in the neighborhood, you know.
We've visited it many times. Well, we'd like to thank you all for joining us here as we revisit Chuck Norris's 1990s action drama turned socio-political expose. Today, we'll be recapping and reviewing Season 4, Episode 11, The Covenant, where Walker must dole out justice when CD is the victim of gang violence. But before we head to the Big and Tall store for some oversized denim and flannel, join us as we pull up a bar stool at CD's Bar and Grill. Fancy meeting you guys here.
Yeah, man, it's good to be back at CD's here.
Well, I mean, you can tell from the background noise that this is a bustling atmosphere, but everyone is adhering to CDC guidelines.
Yeah, I mean, I think CD, he has everybody sit at shotgun length, so it's good.
They've added a C to the bar sign, actually, so it's CDC's Bar and Grill. This week on tap, CD has chosen to serve us up an ice-cold Oktoberfest from Shoveltown Brewery in Shoveltown itself, northeastern Massachusetts. As described in the Bar and Grill fall draft menu, our interpretation of this traditional beer style is rich in malt with a balance of clean hop bitterness. You guys ready to unleash your inner Berliner?
Oh, I can't wait.
Let's bring it.
Let's crack it and then attack it. This is the first perfect pour I've done. Let the record show.
I mean, I didn't spill mine, but it's got a little bit more head than I would like. Look at that. Not great.
Yeah.
Practice.
Shoveltown, huh? So I've never heard of Northeastern Mass, and when you just said that, I thought you said, like, Northeastern Mass.
Truth be told, I actually lived in Northeastern for quite some time. Northeastern, as typical of New England or Massachusetts towns, has been split from the original Easton, such that there's a Northeastern and a Southeastern, and I believe both of them are actually south of straight-up Easton. So it's very confusing when you're in Northeastern because you're south of Easton, I believe. Anyways, it earned the name Shoveltown because the Ames Shovel Factory was based out of Easton. They used bog iron from the local bogs to create shovel heads.
So, like, shovel heads for shoveling the snow or shoveling whatever?
Yeah, like your typical sort of, like, spade shovel.
Okay.
Yeah.
For digging dirt.
There's actually another brewery in Easton called Bog Iron Brewing Company.
Well, this Oktoberfest, I dig it. It tastes good. It kind of reminds me of the Sam Adams Oktoberfest, except Sam Adams Oktoberfest is a little more malty, and this definitely has that hop bitterness that they talked about in the description that kind of hits as an aftertaste that makes it a little more fresh than I would say that the Sam Adams. I kind of dig this one.
It tastes a little lighter. It's good.
Tastes more German, too. I don't know what in it makes it more German, but it tastes more German.
Coincidentally, I found this picture of Chuck Norris a while back, and it actually is relevant to this episode now.
Oh, is that with the Jean-Claude?
Somebody, like, how would you describe this, Evan?
This appears to be a plowed sidewalk that has been photoshopped with someone shoveling it. But the person shoveling its face is replaced with an aged Chuck Norris. Mm-hmm. And there's someone trying to block the shovel, or that person is actually...
He is the shovel.
They're the head of the shovel. Never mind.
Spread eagle.
This is Jean-Claude Van Damme's face, I guess torso, and then his legs, which Jean-Claude Van Damme, action movie star, one of the only ones that could do a full-on split. So he's doing a split, and they're using Jean-Claude Van Damme on the ground with a split to plow snow.
Chuck Norris is literally shoveling snow with Jean-Claude Van Damme's crotch.
Yeah. It would seem that way.
I wouldn't say shoveling. That's plowing.
Yeah, he totally is plowing. Yeah, if I mean, this was totally appropriate. I mean, I wonder if they have a brand of shovel with a Jean-Claude Van Damme head at the Shoveltown Brewery.
Yeah, it seems like they should get on that.
Opportunity missed, if not. So, yeah. I think we'll have to email him this one.
Yeah, it's a pretty niche market.
I think maybe only Chuck Norris himself could get Jean-Claude Van Damme to submit to become his shovel.
Have they ever starred opposite each other?
Not, sure not that I know of, not that I've seen, but...
Who knows? Maybe there's an episode of Walker out there where there's a guest star just waiting to be dropped on us out of nowhere.
I started following the Chuck Norris memes and jokes page on Facebook, and they've got a lot of good stuff up there, a lot of Chuck Norris jokes and whatnot, but I posted up our latest episode, Angel, up there.
An intrepid viewer of Walker, Texas Ranger, Samantha Whitworth, noticed that that episode was actually on the night we posted our podcast up. So she's commenting on how strange it is that we're pretty much in complete sync with the show.
And I was like, it's syndicated so heavily that it's bound to happen. But she seemed to think that we're in sync with him. And I don't think she's talking about God here.
It isn't capitalized, so it's not God and it's not Chuck Norris, so I don't know who it is.
No, I think she's talking about Chuck Norris.
Well, that should be capitalized, right?
Yeah, either way.
Yeah, I guess, you know, your point is certainly a valid one where so many of these shows are on that coincidences abound because the sheer number of episodes on are so
high. I don't
know.
I like to think we're in sync with Chuck Norris. I prefer that, and we'll take it. I mean, it's better to be in sync with Chuck Norris than not.
Hmm.
I don't want to be on the opposite end of that.
No, it's true. We're in sync on a higher level.
I mean, sampling bias aside, we're definitely hitting a fair number of coincidences here, so I'm down with that.
Believe what you want to believe. That's what I believe.
The truth is out there.
I believe.
I choose to believe my reality is real.
Well, that's enough banter for now. Let's get to the real heart of the matter. If you're watching along at home and don't want any spoilers, hit pause and watch Season 4, Episode 11, The Covenant, and come right back to us. Welcome back. Let's dig in, boys. This episode originally aired on December 9th, 1995, and it's our first Walker Christmas special.
Kind of.
It's definitely listed as such, but really, we don't get much of the Christmas spirit. It does open with some pretty sick Christmas music, though. Oh, yeah. What's that all about, Bob?
The first one, at some point, I thought it might have been When the Levee Breaks. Did you guys catch that? I think it didn't sound like it at the beginning, but there was a point towards the next scene where they went cut back to it, and it definitely sounded like they sampled When the Levee Breaks. But
with some jingle bells, right?
Something yeah, like that. Some
Deck jingle the Halls. Bells.
Oh, it was like a hip hop.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they had like a Santa Claus like hanging out in the opening shot.
Yeah, this is all on the street where CD's Bar and Grill is, right?
Which the establishing shot is of the Fort Worth Stock Grounds. So we actually learn that CD's Bar and Grill is in fact in lore in Fort Worth.
Which we knew because we were corrected very quickly on that last
couple
weeks
and in
ago.
The stockyards, which is where the talented slackers are telling us, hey, dude, the stockyards are where it's at. This is where Walker's been filmed, a lot of the stuff. So so shout out to them again.
Kind of looks like a set of an old Western or something.
It does. But unlike an old Western, Santa Claus and your hoity-toity crowd are walking around the streets, and just as they're walking up to a storefront, a half dozen we know that they're up to no good because they're wearing clothes that are six sizes too large and they're plaid, and a couple of them are wearing bandanas. And when they come on the scene, the music changes to something a bit more nefarious.
Yeah.
Maybe the same drum beat, but less Christmas.
Yeah. We soon realize that this group of youngsters is going into different storefronts and menacing people. One of these storefronts, of course, being CD's Bar and Grill.
And by menacing, they're essentially saying, hey, look, you just need to pay our subscription service and we'll protect you, you know. It's kind of like Amazon Prime your business. No.
It's like paying for Norton antivirus when they threaten to give your computer viruses if you don't buy their software.
Totally. I think we would be remiss to say that this is a Mexican gang, if we couldn't tell by the dress, and we will soon find out as soon as they open their mouths.
We should say it's a Latino gang. I don't think they specify what country they come from.
Okay.
Yeah, but, you know, when this was recorded, we would have made that generalization.
That's probably true.
Okay. Again, before we dig ourselves a huge hole in this episode, we
don't
have
think
three white guys
it.
From the Northeast. Let's just throw that out there.
Yes. Regardless, this guy's up to no good. And they bust in on CD's bar and grill. And he's like, hey, fellas, you know, I'm setting up for my Christmas party. And we're not open yet. And they're like, hey, man, we don't want to actually buy anything from your business. You need to buy something from us. Basically, right. Protection. From us.
Right. And he's like, no needed, fellas. And he pulls out his shotgun, which is awesome, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was really nice about it coming up to that point.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, you know, I think I'll be okay. You know,
they knock a table over with some glasses. Yeah. And, you know, they're definitely menacing to him and a quote-unquote old friend in this episode named Lupe, who I'm not sure we'll ever see again.
No,
but she's basically
not helping
them out at CDs. But once they flip over that table and really start threatening, yeah, that's when he whips out the blunderbuss and does some menacing himself. I believe he says something along the line of, if you guys come back here, I'll quote, plant this barrel so far up your butt, they'll hear the echoes in Dallas, end quote.
Again, establishing that Dallas is not the same as Fort Worth.
I don't know why putting it up the butt would make it echo more or make it louder.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Be like a human silencer or something like that.
Right,
you know?
Right. Unless he's using the intestines as like a megaphone.
I think they call it a butt nose shotgun.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it is.
As with most of the things CD says, best not to think about it too hard.
All right, little partner.
So, of course, they've got their tails between their legs, and they're out of there.
They were showed up by a senior citizen.
Pretty much. And Lupe's like, oh, you should call the cops, CD. Those guys are dangerous. And he's like, oh, you know, no need. And he just starts dancing. He's like, yeah. I got to go get the Christmas ornaments. And she goes to call the cops.
Yeah. And he's like in typical standard issue CD dress with high old man pants and like a vest, right?
Oh, for sure, yeah, with his cool hat.
His cool white open road Stetson hat.
So these gangbangers are in their car sort of brooding over the fact that he got shown up by an old guy. And they're just sitting in their beat-up car, and boo, lo and behold, here comes CD out the back door of the restaurant walking to his vehicle.
I think he was taking out some trash or something, right?
No, he was going to go get more decorations.
Oh, okay.
Ornaments. Yeah.
But as soon as he walks out the door, like the music goes, bum, bum, bum.
And we're like, oh, no, CD, don't turn your back.
Suffice it to say, even though he might be good at defending himself, he doesn't have a lot of awareness of his surroundings. And as he's... walking back from his Jeep Cherokee.
It might have been a Grand Cherokee, but yeah.
Yeah. he gets taken out.
How does he get taken out, Bob?
They plow right into him, and he goes up over the windshield.
They flip him like a rag doll over the front of his car, right?
Yeah, and you know, all things considered, it was pretty well done.
Definitely a real human.
It definitely real insane. Human. Definitely no obvious shots of the stunt guy's face. They did a really good job on that.
It was insane.
But just the thought of CD getting plowed by a car. It's pretty over the top.
It was. I was like, oh, no. Yeah, just to see him like flip over, it was unbelievable.
Suffice it to say, they decked his halls.
He sure did.
And they left him like in the alley, and apparently Walker and Trivette got the phone call and were on their way to check out CDs, and they see CD in the back alley behind CD's bar, and they race to his rescue.
He's unconscious, just laying there.
No bueno. Cut to credits. Whew.
Yeah, well, they call him the meat wagon. Right?
Yeah. That was kind of a crazy opening, because you're like, wow, CD was like super badass, and then he got his ass handed to him. Over the hood of a car.
Too.
He's probably the fourth most important character on the show.
Yeah.
So yeah, it cuts to credits and then come back, and Walker and Trivette are trying to get to the bottom of what happened. And they realize that there's been this gang going around and causing trouble in the neighborhood. And they do some old school detective work, and that's canvassing the neighborhood. And everyone's being very tight-lipped about it because they're too scared to rat on these people. And just as they're talking about gang violence and everything, Trivette brings up, oh, how about your class tonight? And the tone of the conversation becomes even more serious than it was before. Like, something very grave is about to happen. And we get the sense that Walker is doing something that's going to change the universe forever. But we soon realize that it's just his karate class for kids.
Don't knock it until you try it, buddy.
He's keeping those kids out of trouble.
Is he, though?
Well, we'll find out by the end of the episode, Evan.
So, yeah, he's got his karate class at school, and this is his...
Kickstart?
Kick drugs or something like that?
I think in real life it's called Kickstart, but maybe they write that in later.
This is a rare instance where Walker is kind of... Well, there are a couple of things odd about this next scene. One is that Walker is wrong about something, or he's sort of taken by surprise with regards to something. He notices that one of his students, who's like 8, is missing his belt.
Yeah.
So he calls him up to the front of the class to call him out about it. And this kid's like...
This moment could be up there with the Walker I Have AIDS scene, right?
Yeah. I think so.
So Walker literally goes up to this little boy. They're all in their gis, except...
Ricardo.
Yeah, so he doesn't have his belt on. And he goes, hey, we're all supposed to have our belts and everything here. It's part of our uniform that you show up to class with. Ricardo, where's your belt?
Where indeed?
I know you've got a purple belt. Where is it?
My little sister was killed by a drive-by shooting.
Oh, no.
So I put it in her coffin so she could take it to heaven.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Egg on face.
Yeah. Yeah, Walker just stepped in that, right?
Yeah.
To his credit, though, he literally, like, his acting didn't change, but he literally walked into the hallway to just kind of soak that in for a second. So I give him that.
Well, first thing he does is get this kid a new purple belt, because definitely deserves it.
He definitely charged him $20, too, at the end of the class.
Oh, for sure. Prorated. And then he walks into the hallway, and we see genuine emotion from Walker. Rare indeed.
Written into the show. He had to go compose himself in the hallway.
Yeah. I believe the direction was pinch between your eyes, which is a move I don't think we've ever seen Walker do, and he may never do again. Yeah. Now, okay, when Ricardo is telling Walker about his sister and everything, was there anything weird about the sound? You guys notice that? It seemed to me like a really obvious overdub of like an adult woman trying to be a small child. That's what it sounded like to me.
Oh, I didn't really notice that, but now I'm going to have to go back and listen.
Yeah, it sounds really weird.
And what does he say exactly?
He's like, my sister got killed by a drive-by shooting, and I put my belt in her coffin. Maybe so she could have it in heaven or something. It was so it was like, oh man.
But he says it so fast. Like, it's like,
probably I killed a drive-by shooting, so I put it in the coffin. Blah, blah, blah.
You guys have to watch it. It sounds really weird. Like, I had to rewind it and listen to it again, because it really sounds like an adult overdub. The sound quality is definitely different.
All right. Well, moving on.
So then there's a whole training montage. They then undergo their class. And now, Trivette and Walker were talking about the class as if it were happening at night, but it's clearly happening during the day.
They're also talking about it like these kids were, like, at risk. Mm-hmm. But half of these kids are just, like, nerds.
Yeah, a lot of them are.
They're at risk of getting beaten up. They're not going to join gangs. I mean, some of them, sure, but...
as we find out.
Well, one of the people we see in there looks eerily familiar. And you get this Walker deja vu pretty often because they reuse actors quite a lot. But right after the montage of the training and everything, Walker and his assistant dojo leader are lining up to shake the hands of everyone in the class. And we see this actor again, and Walker says, "Tommy, how you doing?" And we realize this is a recurring character. This is Tommy Lopez.
From the episode Circle of Life that we just finished a podcast on. So this episode apparently happened before Circle of Life, so we're kind of getting the backstory.
Right.
I didn't even know that. I didn't even put two and two together.
Until right now?
Yeah. No.
Oh, no, Bob.
No, dude.
Until, I don't think we can call you a walkerologist. I'll never use that one again.
I was like taking notes about their names, and I was like, oh, like Joe Lopez. I'm like, yeah, they're really original with these names, guys. Come on. The Lopez family.
No, even worse, Bob, they're really original with these actors.
Well, I did think she looked familiar. In fact, at one point, I think I might have been like, was she in one of these other episodes?
She's in like six episodes.
Dude, you're done.
Okay, so this is, this is Tommy Lopez.
I'll do my best.
And Walker's like, oh, man, how you doing? He's like, well, I'll never keep up with Ernesto.
The brother that we couldn't remember from the other episode, Bob.
Yeah, that was a detail that slipped both of you guys on the last episode.
Yeah, we're like, oh, they had a brother? Remember that? And Evan was the only one that caught that. So we actually meet the brother in this episode.
We get to meet Ernesto. And if you recall, in Circle of Life, Ernesto had died.
Right.
So I'm
right.
Thinking, is Ernesto going to die in this episode? We'll find out.
He doesn't.
We'll find out.
Well, spoiler alert, we watched the other one first, so we know he's going to die at some point.
I know, exactly.
Odds are it's going to be on the show.
But, you know, he takes after his father, and he's pretty good at recovering from gunshot wounds. We're getting ahead of ourselves a bit.
Yeah.
But we learned that Tommy's brother, Ernesto, was an early student of Walker's and a success story. I guess Ernesto is now a manager at a garage. So that's kind of crazy. It's like, oh man, things are coming full circle of life here.
Svenja!
Yeah, cut to CD unceremoniously in a neck brace and in a hospital bed. And he's pouring through the pages of, this was before computers. So he's basically looking through a 3-ring binder of Polaroid pictures of gang members.
Of Mexicanos most wanted.
Yeah, trying to pick out who ran him over.
Mm-hmm. And he finds the guy pretty easily. It was kind of like third page. Yeah. Oh, there he is.
Yeah. I mean, he went through a lot of them. But, I mean, CD, you know, he's a former Texas Ranger. He knows this stuff. He knows how to find someone. So,
yeah,
surprisingly. And perhaps more surprisingly, without any text on those pages, they're just photographs. Walker immediately recognizes this person. Is Sonny Portillo, who's also known as...
Well, no. Walker says Sonny Portillo, a.k.a. the Viper.
Which AKA we never hear again the entire episode.
Right. No one ever referred to him as that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're like, yeah, it didn't stick, Chuck. We might just drop that from this episode.
He's also the leader of the new gang known as the Vatos Locos, which means crazy dudes.
Okay, all right. It all comes together now.
So just as we're learning who Sonny is, Sonny actually comes and pays a visit to Tommy. Tommy's working at the garage, and, you know, he's putting in a good day's work.
He was there visiting his older brother, and his older brother said, hey, Tommy, can you go wheel this trash out back for me? And while he's doing that, Sonny approaches him.
Sonny rolls up in his sick whip, filled with babes and bros, and he tries to get Tommy to join the Vatos Locos. And, you know, Tommy, he's resisting, but before he can get too much off, Ernesto comes out and basically shows up Sonny. So Sonny's already been shown up by an old guy. Now he's getting shown up by a guy who's, like, got a job.
Seems like Ernesto was able to avoid being pulled into gang life. And Sonny kind of jealous of that in some sort of way. And so when Ernesto is telling Tommy to not get pulled into gang life too, that just kind of makes Sonny want to pull in Tommy more, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's like forbidden fruit. So Sonny has just been shown up by Ernesto and CD. So he now wants to get even with somebody. So he decides to initiate some young recruits who are like 10. And he's going to have them do their first drive-by shooting with the Vatos Locos. And this is against a rival gang named the Diamantes. We get our first glimpse of the Diamantes. And if the Vatos Locos were rocking the Big and Tall store for gigantic gray flannel shirts, that's only because the Diamantes bought out all of the red ones. So, I don't know. Bob, can you describe the Diamantes' sick party that they're having?
Oh, boy.
It's a vibrant scene.
Well, they're jamming out to a particularly excellent song that we've already heard in a previous episode. What was the name of this one, Adam?
It's called Saturday Night Ballin'.
And who's the artist?
Slow Pain. And this is... It's kind of blasphemous because they reuse like the same rap song for multiple episodes for things that they think that a gang would be jamming out to. And in fact, in this scene when they're rocking Saturday Night Ballin', like the dance moves are actually pretty awesome. Like the people are like in their flannels, kind of like doing some moves and snapping their fingers to this beat, you know? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm not going to lie, like, after we first heard Saturday Night Ballin' in the episode The Neighborhood, every morning when I get up, and it's a Saturday, I will throw it on, because...
That song is a total earworm. It's really
legit.
Good.
It's legit. I've actually learned the synth bass line on keyboard, because it's so good.
It is just a Snoop Dogg ripoff, though, right?
That's not pretty much, yeah. But I Shazammed a few songs from this episode whenever I could get it to catch, and there are at least two other songs from the same album as Saturday Night Ballin'. So it's like, you know, whoever did the music for Walker, Texas Ranger just had one rap CD that they kept using over and over again for the Walker background music whenever they needed, like, some gangster hip-hop kind of thing. One of the songs from the same album was called My Trigger Finger. The other one's called The Funky Funky Bomb.
Oh, The Funky Funky Bomb.
I would say with regards to this episode, one of those is more apropos than the other. We'll let our listeners determine that.
These tracks come from Slow Pain's The Baby OG album that was released on Thump Records. Kind of a sad thing to note was when I was looking this up, I found out that he passed away in September of this year.
Oh, no.
So I want to give a shout out to Slow Pain because I have been jamming on Saturday Night Ballin' way more than I should. And I love that song.
Good one.
R.I.P.
So yeah, the Diamantes are just rocking out after some Saturday Night Ballin', seemingly having a pretty good time, you know? And I will say, of the two gangs that we see in this episode, if I were to be in one over the other, I would definitely be in the Diamantes. I mean, they seem to have a good time. They seem to have a little bit of morality. And they like to rock out to some sweet jams every once in a while and do some dancing. So they seem pretty good. Also, I think red looks better on me than gray. But
Yeah. I thought the same thing. I thought they were definitely the good gang.
Yeah, if there can be one.
They had the heart of gold. You know, we'll hear more about that later.
Exactly. So these guys are rocking out, and all of a sudden, you know, this I don't know if it's a Cadillac or something else. It's pretty beat up. Kind of rolls up on them, starts opening fire, and they actually hit some guys. It's no bueno.
No, dude.
Cut to a scene where Ernesto and Tommy are doing perhaps the most wholesome task they can be doing, which is unloading a family Christmas tree.
Oh, my God. And this is at night on their block.
And their mother is looking from up above, looking down on them, and she's complimenting the tree, and everyone's so excited about it. And nice family banter. Another car rolls up, shouts out, Diamantes! And then opens fire on them, and they hit Ernesto.
And Tommy's there horrified, and the mother just shrieks. And it's like, oh, man, this is like the neighborhood all over again, right? Just horrifying.
This is where I should have realized they're the same actors, because Tommy's reaction is so over the top. And Ernesto, when he gets shot, kind of does this weird... They never show any blood, which seems to be a classic Walker move.
He's like, the Diamante shot my brother! Something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, Bob, this is when you should have recognized the Lopez family, because the mother is the same actress.
Right.
And very rarely, we've noted this before, very rarely are they consistent, even with like repeat characters, are they consistent with acting?
Yeah, they recast repeat characters. This they didn't, to their credit.
So at this point, I thought this was the origin. I thought this is where Ernesto...
Dies.
Totally dies.
Exactly.
You know, like that's part of his whole story. I'm like, man, they just... I mean, Ernesto seemed like a pretty cool dude.
Yeah.
He seemed like a nice guy.
The way that scene went, I thought he was definitely dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And especially knowing the Circle of Life episode that he does die... I thought that was going to be it, too, for sure.
Well, but coming from my point of view, where I didn't realize they're the same people, I still thought he was going to die. So
okay. Well, they did their job then.
Yeah.
So we think Walker catches word of this, and he goes into the hospital, and we see our favorite. It's actually a different waiting room. It's not purple.
It might be a different set.
This was only season 4, so you know it's not the classic purple waiting room that we've grown to love. We learn that Ernesto is... hurt real bad, but you know, he's stabilizing or something. And Walker talks to Tommy, who seems to have revenge in his eyes. He learns from Tommy that it was the Diamantes. They're in a car that he recognized as belonging to the Diamantes. And of course, you know, we can't forget them chillingly shouting out Diamantes before opening fire.
But you always want to claim your hit,
right?
I guess. In classic Walker fashion, he decides to do a little shakedown.
And he essentially goes over to like what looks like a frat house. But
it looks like the it actually looks like the parole house for the Circle of Life.
Yeah, the Diamantes are just hanging out there, and Walker kind of pulls up in his truck, and they're like, "Oh, Walker, what's going on?" You know, one of the guys has like a reputation with Walker. As if they're, like, tight.
Paco.
Yeah.
Paco is my favorite actor by far in this entire episode. Maybe
the whole series is what you're saying?
Maybe.
Everything's
so
serious,
over the
man.
Top, and he's wearing, like, these tiny, like, fake Oakley sunglasses.
They're so narrow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
They look terrible. But he's all like, look, man, Walker, you're the only cop I respect. You've always been straight with us. We'll be straight with you. It wasn't us that did that shootout, and oh my god, Paco, he's the best.
Yeah, and then Walker kind of does like a Curb Your Enthusiasm, like look him in the eye to kind of feel him out to see if he's telling the truth. It's like, and then Walker's like, okay, I believe you.
Yeah, so he doesn't have to put anyone in a headlock or, like, twist anyone's arm or flip anyone over. Like, this is a very peaceful shakedown. But as soon as he gets that information, he realizes, I better go check out the Vatos Locos because there's something afoot here, and they probably did something.
Sounds like a setup job.
So shakedown number 2.
Bob, can you describe the hideout for the Vatos Locos? And describe Walker's entrance into this place, because it's
so good.
Oh, yeah, Walker's entrance. So he just walks up to this, maybe like an abandoned factory. I don't know.
Maybe this is the stockyards.
Yeah.
Industrial, like, kind of buildings and all that stuff.
Yeah, so they've got this building is all covered with graffiti. Walker walks up, and there's, of course, some guards outside, right? One of which is 13, and the other which is obviously white and probably wouldn't be in this gang. But he decides to say, you know, this is a invite only, so you're going to have to walk away. And Walker just disposes of him immediately.
Does he just, like, throw him?
He just throws him on the ground, which, as we know, when Walker throws someone on the ground, they stay down.
They're down for the count.
Yeah. No double tapping necessary. He's out.
No, yeah.
They were Walker tapped.
Then was he like threatens a little kid. He's like, what about you? You want some?
He's like, also, I want your lunch money.
Also, join my karate club.
So then we see the interior of this like gang hideout, and it looks like it's like a soundstage, and they let someone just go loose with like purple spray paint, and they're like, we've only got like these three walls for you to paint on, and just do like gang graffiti like crazy. So right. Every surface is covered.
We've also only been able to afford three cans of spray paint, so do your best with red and blue.
Yeah, so they do that, and there's like a hallway with a door, a long hallway that leads into the main place where all the Vatos Locos are hanging out, and Sonny's kind of riff-raffing with his gang, and all of a sudden the door like kind of slams open as if Walker kind of kicked it open, and Walker just kind of starts walking through the hallway into where all the gang is hanging out, and they're like, who is this guy? It was like kind of the best entrance ever.
It was quite good. So yeah, Walker walks right up to Sonny, and he basically says he's taking Sonny into custody for menacing store owners. And Sonny's got all this bravado.
He's like, you got no evidence, S.A.
Yeah, we should say that there's a lot of
Holmes.
I don't know how stereotypical it is. I'm not going to say whether it is or isn't stereotypical, but there are a heck of a lot of Holmes, homie, loco, and essay thrown around in this episode. Like, way too many.
Pretty much anyone of Mexican descent alternate between Holmes and essay. And mm-hmm. Evan, you did a final count on this, did you not? I'll tell you what I counted, and then you can tell me. So I only counted Holmes and essay, and I was at about like 42.
No, that's
those
way
two
too
combined
many.
Or of each?
That's way too many.
With both of them.
I counted seven Holmes. I didn't do homies, and I didn't do loco. So I did Holmes. There were seven Holmes and 20 essays.
You didn't count homie?
No.
What? If you did that, it would be at 42.
All right, whatever.
Just as I watched it, I was like literally like Holmes, homie, essay. I was at 42. And this show is only 45 minutes long.
It's like a 1990s teen movie with the word like.
It's unbelievable. It's like they told the actors to say homie, Holmes, and essay as much as they could.
And they did.
And they never say them back to back, but they alternate.
That's just skillful editing, really.
I think it's intentional, and maybe we'll see this again in future episodes. But this one literally had at least one of those phrases per minute, you know. And they're not in all the scenes.
Yeah, it's over the top. Sure.
It's insane. It's insane.
Let's just say it's a writer's crutch.
It's loco, man. It's loco.
It's so loco, I say. So Walker just kicks the door in.
Before Walker goes in, Trivette makes some comment. He's like, you're going to need an army to go in there. He goes, I'm all the army I'm going to need. I was like, check.
Oh, my God.
Truth. There's truth in that.
That's a one-man army.
One riot, one ranger.
Yeah.
So Walker just waltzes in, and Sonny's too scared to really call his guys in to do anything about it. So he's like, oh, don't worry, guys. I'll be out in no time. They don't have anything on me.
Mm-hmm.
So Walker takes Sonny into some sort of interrogation room, which is just a room with a table. And then, like, listeners can't see these microphone stands that Bob and I have, but they're basically designed the same way that like old desk lamps are designed, where they're like spring loaded and you can sort of like, you know, move where they are. In this interrogation room, they basically have like a desk lamp with like one of these adjustable arms with like one light bulb in it, right? And it's just like bent over right in his face. Like, they're just very transparent.
We
about
don't
want to
hang anything. Let's just put something on the desk.
Right. They're sitting in he's sitting in a chair, and they've got this long telescoping arm for a one light bulb, and it's shining like a foot from his face.
Feel the heat, homeboy.
It is not an interrogation room. No surprise. The interrogation doesn't
leads
go
nowhere.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
Alex comes in to say that he made bail, and that's like one of her two lines in the whole episode.
And so the mother of Tommy, is her name Marta?
I guess her name is Esperanza.
What?
But
no,
we never,
they don't call her that.
I thought her name was Marta in the first one. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Oh my god, okay.
I can't read my writing. But yeah, Marta
I'm on the
Lopez.
IMDb page right now, okay? So this actress, her name is Melinda Rena.
Yeah.
Or probably Rena. She's in multiple Walker Texas Ranger episodes. The first one is in an episode which we'll cover at some point that's awesome called Crime Wave Dave.
Yeah,
1993, so that's maybe like season two. Yeah. She plays a woman named Bambi. Then she plays a character in a 1994 episode, Kit Dolan. And then in this episode, 1995, she plays Esperanza Lopez, okay, as part of the Lopez family, which we follow through multiple episodes, including the next one the next year called The Brotherhood, in which her name is now changed to Marta.
Oh,
and then in Circle of Life, which we watched and reviewed for the podcast, she's also Marta. Then in Justice Delayed, they're in another episode, Marta Lopez again. So she started out as the Lopez family, but her name, she's credited as Esperanza Lopez. Now, to the credit of the show, they never say Esperanza or Marta. I don't think they ever actually address her by her first name. So I think as credited, she's Esperanza.
In the later episodes, they probably were like, do we even address her by a name? No? Okay, well, now her name is Marta.
For the purposes of the show, we'll call her Marta, the mother of Tommy and...
Ernesto.
Ernesto, okay.
Walker then goes and visits Mrs. Lopez, where she works. And this is before Family Lopez restaurant opens up. And she's cutting her teeth in the culinary world, working in a corn tortilla factory.
Corn or flour? I don't know. I don't know
They're
if we
corn.
Could specify.
They look corn. Like corn.
Didn't yeah, that seemed a little too on the nose for me. I was like, are you serious? They're going to make her work in like a tortilla factory? Come on.
Yeah, that was slightly problematic.
The show is always on the nose, including roundhouse kicks. They're usually on the nose.
At the very least, though, yes, they made her work in a tortilla factory, but in the next episode, she has her own Mexican restaurant. So there is that.
It's true. So he visits her, and she gives certainly the best acting performance of the show. Pretty poignant sort of play-by-play of how youngsters in her neighborhood are basically coerced into joining gangs, and then they're dead before they become adults. And what are the parents to do but sort of sit by and watch it happen? There's nothing they can do about it. And I imagine in certain neighborhoods that might actually be a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
Whether the show actually addresses it accurately, that might be a problem too.
Yeah. Certainly the horror of it they got down, maybe not the solution, but we'll find out.
This is where Walker realizes that his young pledge, Tommy, is probably going to be joining the dark side pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that look in his eye, according to his mother.
Dead eyes.
And that's when we see Tommy and his friend, who's the nerd with glasses, heading to karate class. And finally, the Vatos Locos, the crazy dudes, they pull up in their ride and they're like, hey man, how's your brother? And he's like, oh, he's not good.
He got shot by not your gang, the rival gang.
And they're like, hey, you know, your brother would want you to avenge him. You gonna join us? And Tommy's friend is like, I believe his friend's name is Carlos. He's like, no, no, no. And everyone completely dismisses Carlos. And Tommy's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, he seemed really like, I don't know. No, I don't think so. No, and then all of a sudden he just, all right, let's do this.
Yeah, let's do this thing.
Good about it.
So yeah, as part of joining the gang, we learned that you get the snot beat out of you by the rest of the gang. So
oh my
fun.
God. Yeah, the initiation scene was like in the same hideout with all the walls with spray paint on it. And they have like poor Tommy in his jean jacket on the ground being kicked by like all the members of the Vatos Locos until like finally they're like, welcome to the Brotherhood. And he has like a bloody nose.
Sound effects are amazing, too. When he was on the ground, they were kicking him.
Oh, yeah.
It was a video game sound.
While they're doing that, Walker's doing his karate class. And after class, he asks Carlos, hey, where's Tommy? And Carlos is like, he's not here. He joined the Vatos Locos. And Walker goes and tries to pay a visit. And he's waiting when Tommy comes out of their dilapidated building.
Right.
And he tries to confront him about it. And he says, the decision you make now will affect your life forever. And Tommy's all like, Whatever, man.
You don't know me, Walker. You don't have to grow up in this neighborhood.
Pretty much.
And rightfully so.
Tommy then starts joining efforts to tag all of the Diamante's territory.
And Walker is kind of like patrolling the neighborhood in his truck while almost like the toddlers of the gang are out there spray painting rival turf. And Tommy goes to his buddies like, oh, just say you haven't seen me. And he like runs around the other corner. And Walker's like, hey, have you seen Tommy? And they're like, no, we haven't. Don't know why that scene was in there, but okay.
Yeah, it was weird. And all the spray paint their painting was on like plywood that was clearly just put up on brick walls to be spray painted. Meanwhile, Trivette is being useful.
Who is that?
He has his one shining star moment where he basically just camps out in front of a computer until it gives him some sort of result. Something that, like, nowadays would take 30 seconds. You know, maybe it's a fingerprint, maybe it's DNA, but if it's DNA, that's, like, multiple days. But in this case, he's waiting for some ballistics information to come back.
They get the bullet out of Ernesto, and then they get the bullet out of the guy in the Diamantes. And based on the, you know, Microsoft Paint image of these two bullets side by side, they conclude that they came from the same gun.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Tell me about
it. Oh, my God.
So you're saying the Diamantes didn't shoot Ernesto?
Either that or they shot themselves, too.
Someone's not telling the truth is what this says.
That's crazy.
That's really what it comes down to, yeah.
Just as they're figuring this out, another expendable old friend who is some rando detective named Ochoa, who's apparently a specialist on gangs, I guess we're meant to believe. I don't know. He comes in and he's all like, hopped up. He's like, man, it's going down. I don't know what's going down, but it's going down. I don't know where it's going down, but it's going down somewhere. It's going to be on the news tonight, man. It's going down. And Walker's like, I guess I better go out. And they're like, wait, where are you going? And he says,
to stop a war.
At which point they don't ask, do you want backup or anything? They're just like, okay, cool.
Yeah, not going to ask any questions on that.
Typical Walker behavior.
Like, yeah, let him get shot.
Yeah.
So he goes to the Diamantes and he meets his boy Paco over there and says, hey, look, I need you guys to stand down. I know you need to protect your name because they framed you, but let the police handle this. We got you. And Paco's like, look, man, we have to keep up our cred for the Diamantes here. If the Vatos Locos are going to frame us, if we don't retaliate, we're going to look like a bunch of fairies, man.
Yeah, his number two, Guzman, he's definitely the bad cop in that scenario.
You know, he's like, for sure.
Oh, man, screw this guy. He's a cop. We don't, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
I also found it funny that guy is actually, I guess he's like Thai. You guys notice that?
Yeah, I think the Diamantes are, they're a pretty inclusive gang.
Yeah, that's way more open.
I would want to be in their gang, I think, if I was going to be in it. But Paco seemed like a cool guy, too.
Paco, he's my man. Yeah. I love Paco.
Kill his shades.
He goes, Walker, look, you've got 1 hour. In 1 hour, we're going to have to come protect our street cred, but you got 1 hour. And Walker's like, that's all I'll need. And you're like, how is Walker going to like prevent a gang war? But we certainly find out, don't we?
We sure do.
Just so you guys know, it is going down. The place it's going down.
Is it on? It's on.
Yeah, it is on. It is going down. And the place it's going down is the local park. And the night it's going down is Christmas Eve.
Which, again, really is not referenced enough for this to be a Christmas episode. I would literally was waiting for, like, a Christmas miracle or some, like, divine intervention or anything.
Snow in Dallas.
Oh, yeah. Snow or a star or anything to have to do with Christmas. All we got was like a little Santa Claus and like a hip-hop version of some Christmas music at the beginning. And then at this showdown, we're in like a dilapidated park that has like pipes painted like candy canes. Mm.
It was like, yeah, sewage
pipes.
Sewage painted. Ventilation pipes.
Yeah, maybe it was a local landfill.
It was. It wasn't even like a real park. We're like, what? This was like the most, it was like a Freddy Krueger nightmare.
And then a couple like light up angels. It was nice. It's really nice.
And then so you get this establishing shot of like a waste dump Christmas haven, and then it's at night. And then you see the Vatos Locos just walking together menacingly out from the shadows.
And just as they're walking out from behind like a Christmas tree, Walker pulls up in his gray Ram.
And we get a good establishing shot of the grill of his Ram so we know what brand of truck he drives.
Absolutely. And he gets out alone and starts walking over this bridge.
And it's a long walk. That shot took probably about a whole minute of him walking across this bridge towards the whole Vatos Locos gang armed in a dystopian Christmas park.
And I will say, if we're talking about the armaments of the Vatos Locos, there's a lot of variation in what they've got. Let's just say that they had, like, the prop Uzi that's in all the shows.
Yeah, Sonny has that.
Yeah, and then a couple people have, like, shotguns, and then clearly, like, they just ran out of prop guns. So one guy's just holding, like, the handle to an axe. It doesn't even have an axe head on it. It's just, like, the handle to an axe.
Yeah.
They're, like, just wield something that looks menacing.
Yeah. We haven't done this in a while, but we thought we would do it for this episode here. This is going to be a roundhouse reenactment. And we're going to have Evan portray the Vatos Locos leader, Sonny, and Bob portray Walker. And then at the tail end of the scene, Evan will portray Detective Ocho, and Bob will portray Trivet. And I'll be your narrator here. Walker walks across the bridge and stops, facing off against the Vatos Locos gang, Sonny brandishing a fresh Uzi.
Hey, Locos!
The Diamantes are coming for you, Tio. So your war is going to have to be with me.
You? That's a joke!
You're under arrest.
Hey, I say, you can't book me for the same thing twice.
This time it's for attempted murder. You tried to kill Ernesto Lopez and blame it on the Diamantes.
Sonny?
Cops are born liars, they say. You can't prove it.
The gun in your hand will prove it. Tommy, your brother was operated on this morning. He's going to be okay. Now step away.
Stay where you are, man. You want my bullets, Walker? I'm going to give you the whole damn clip.
Trivet and Detective Ocho watch on in disbelief from behind the safety of a nearby rock wall.
That partner of yours has the heart of a lion.
Yeah, and the brain of a rock.
I think Trivet was speaking for all of us there, you know?
Yeah, yeah, he really was.
Well, initially we're led to believe that Walker really is there solo.
Right, yeah.
But once it cuts away and you see the sort of squad of cops that are back up right there, you're like, oh, okay, he's got backup. He's going to be okay. At which point, Walker then challenges the entire group to hand-to-hand combat. Hashtag easy way or hard way here. He throws down his gun and says, if you guys can all take me out, you guys can get off scot-free. But you get like a boot to the face, so that's a charge.
There certainly were a few of those next.
Right, at which point I would think this would prompt an even more wild response from the people watching from behind a stone wall.
Yeah.
But yeah, Walker throws down his gun, and they're all like, what is he doing? And Trivet goes, he's saving the kids.
Yeah, he's saving the little ones. He didn't want the little ones to get up. And right. So essentially, like, every single Vatos Locos gang member rushes Walker, and he proceeds to, like, throw punches in their face, spin kicks into their chest. And they're just, you know, I mean, Walker's having an easy time with it, really.
Yeah, it's nothing. Like, these guys, they might be doing their drive-by shootings, but they are not taking part in his karate classes, for sure. Like, this is a recruitment video for his karate class.
Yeah, this would definitely be on his kick reel.
So, Sonny takes out a knife, but it's immediately kicked out of his hand by Walker, and Walker gives him a sinister roundhouse kick to the ground. And it's the one roundhouse kick of the entire episode. And as he's lying on the ground, Sonny implores two small children holding shotguns to shoot the law officer.
Right, naturally.
And they look like they're ready to do it.
Yeah, and those guns are like taller than them too.
Oh yeah, but then, you know, since it worked so well earlier on in the episode, Walker gives the two of them the same lecture that he gave Tommy earlier. The decision you make now will affect your entire life. And that's enough to make him stand down.
Yeah, he didn't stare down one barrel of a gun. He stared down two.
Yeah.
While this is happening, Tommy, after he found out during that Walker reenactment there that, oh,
Sonny actually was the one that shot his brother and framed it on the other gang, and the evidence was the Uzi that he had. Tommy picked up the murder weapon so that they could match it to the ballistics that Trivette had earlier in the episode.
And also so that he could get his fingerprints, Walker's fingerprints, and Trivette's fingerprints all over it. But
all over the gun. Yeah, for sure. And every other villain who ever used that Uzi in any other episode of Walker.
That's true. That thing's like a who's who, of enemies from Walker.
Oh, man. So good. So good.
That's the Uzi. If we get that person who has experience with props, I think my number one question was, how many Uzis did they have on set? It has to just be one.
Yeah, you never see more than one Uzi.
I've never seen more than one in an episode.
I hope we're proven wrong, but I'm kind of hope we aren't. So,
situation de-escalates pretty quickly after that. We then end this episode on a belt ceremony, and there's a Lopez family reunion. It's all very joyous.
And we find out that Ernesto is still alive at the end of the episode, which, again, he's in a wheelchair, but he's able to make the belt ceremony so he could see Tommy get awarded a new belt.
And the cycle continues. Some kids come in. They're actually the two kids who are holding guns up at Walker, and they want to join the karate class. And Walker turns the other cheek. Says, hey, Tommy, get these guys some equipment. They're in.
Oh.
He also says, you guys know the rules, right? No drugs, no gangs. All right, they're in. Although you previously broke one of those rules last night, but all right, we'll forget about that.
Yeah,
for sure. To conclude the episode, Trivette walks up to Walker and he's like, man, Walker, how are we ever going to change things? And Walker goes, one kid at a time. And while you're groaning over that line, he repeats it for emphasis. One kid at a time.
I guess you didn't hear me.
Fade to black. This episode is dedicated to Derek Morales, which I tried looking up. I'm guessing it's a victim of gang violence at the time, which was 1996. So...
yeah,
but I couldn't find anything about it, but that's not surprising. It was a while ago.
Yeah, it felt a little forced that Walker was like saying, hey, Tommy, don't join the gang, just do karate instead. That was the solution, right?
Yeah,
pretty much. I mean, it seemed to work for Ernesto. Well, of course, Walker also got Ernesto his job.
He's probably the best reference you can have in the Dallas area there.
Definitely. In a lot of sort of race theory, there's this whole thing about the white savior complex.
Yeah, yep.
I would say that Walker falls into that category pretty often.
So, Walker is the white savior incarnate.
Yes.
There's, the stereotype of Marta working in a tortilla factory, and then in the next episode that continues her story, she works at a Mexican restaurant. And then her husband in the show is portrayed by Danny Trejo, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's all I could think of this whole episode was, man, these kids, their dad's Danny Trejo.
Yeah. We don't see him in this episode, but yeah.
We'll never see him again. You
know, and he's so much cooler than
they are. Just to muddy the waters a little bit here, guys, I started following Danny Trejo on social media, and he's got some awesome posts. But I was surprised to see Danny Trejo has his own taco restaurant called Trejo's Tacos.
Awesome.
Yes.
Machete. What does it say? Machete, don't text.
Yeah.
I assume it's not in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, though.
Yeah, it's in L.A.
And he's got a coffee and donut shop that's kind of like Voodoo Donuts, it looks like.
Nice. I had Voodoo Donuts. They're amazing.
But look at some of these donuts down here. He's got the Lowrider, the OG.
The Abuelita.
That's cool.
So, you know, you might say that Walker was doing some stereotypes in this episode, but Danny Trejo's character worked in a Mexican restaurant and owns a Mexican restaurant chain in real life too. So,
and Danny Trejo is an ex-con.
That's true.
Yeah. He's living it. Well, mercifully for you, that pretty much sums up this episode. We'd like to give a shout out to our friend and collaborator Adam Lauritsen, who's been drawing the amazing Walkerstrations on our social media. Be sure to check out his other art on Instagram at @imaginationrunamuck. When we come back, it'll be time for us to each rate the Covenant. On a scale of 0 to 10, boots to the face, resulting in our patented Roundhouse Roulette episode ranking, complete results of which are now available on our website, roundhouseroulette.com. Don't go away. Welcome back. Well, this was an interesting one. What do you guys think of this?
I like the music. Yeah. I tend to focus on the sound, and I tend to think the more ridiculous the sound effects and the music are, at least that makes it entertaining, but we had no explosions in this episode. Is that right?
Our stats for this episode, explosions, 0. Mm. Vehicle chases, 0. Mm. Fights, 1. Roundhouse kicks, 1.
Yeah, so that's going to put me at a 3.
That's exactly where I fell. Mm-hmm. I mean, it had Walker being Walker, you know, the one-man army.
But we didn't ever have to draw out the artillery.
Yeah, he really only had that one fight at the end, wasn't really drawn out intentionally. And yeah, there were no other ridiculous Walker-isms. I guess he was sort of taking it all into his own hands to try to deal with everything. And I did really like Paco, and that's why I gave us a 3 instead of a 2. I'm not a huge fan of when they just kind of try to deal with this whole culture war thing or gang war thing. And The Neighborhood, which I believe I also ranked quite low, at least that had Crazy Camp and a super shot in it to at least keep things interesting. But this had none of that.
Yeah, I mean, I was waiting for this one to have some divine intervention like The Neighborhood, and then mm-hmm. it definitely would have raked higher as well if we had, you know, a little bit of Christmas Miracle. That would have definitely made it rank higher. I think you got to rate it a little bit higher than The Neighborhood because this actually was a Walker episode. So I'm going to go 4 on this one.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and I mean, CD flipping over the front of a car was insane at the beginning. And it was insane him pulling a shotgun. It was extreme badassery. So that alone right there is worth the watch.
Yeah, for those of you who may watch at home, that all happened in the first 5 minutes of the episode. So save yourself some time.
Yeah. In the unfounded confidence the show takes in being able to solve this social issue with karate is also pretty amazing. So just if you're watching the episode with that lens as well, it could be a little more enjoyable.
Those of you who listened to our podcast or watched The Neighborhood, you also know that the child protagonist in that was also in Walker's karate class. But yeah, I will say that if this episode did take place in, say, season 6 or later, there would have been some sort of divine light or miracle that happened, because this did happen all on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, it was a missed opportunity for sure. Yeah. If we had just maybe like even a sleigh go by with really terrible graphics, that's a few extra points from me.
Well, that gives this episode a measly Roundhouse rating of 3.6 repeating boots to the face. Well, even if we can't quite agree on the number of Roundhouse kicks this episode earned, I think we can all agree that there's no force of justice stronger than a well-placed Roundhouse kick on Christmas Eve.
No doubt.
But those of you listening at home, let us know what you think on social media or by emailing us at roundhouseroulette@gmail.com. When we come back, we'll be spinning the Roundhouse Roulette wheel and selecting next week's episode. Okay, we're back. Bob, you ready to spin that thing?
Let's do this essay.
All right, Holmes.
Oh, he loco, man.
That sounded like Jamaican.
It did. No Way Out.
I like the name.
I think this one guest stars Greg Allman.
Yeah?
That's one way out, but, you know, close enough.
When an imprisoned crime lord breaks out of jail, he kidnaps Alex and Trivette in hopes of luring Walker into a trap.
Yes. Amazing.
It sounds promising.
This is going to be awesome.
This has hashtag one man army written all over it.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. This is going to be a return to form.
All right. Well, we hope you'll join us next week when we share our reactions to Season 7, Episode 18, No Way Out. Share your opinions with us on Facebook and Instagram at Roundhouse Roulette and on Twitter at Roundhouse Pod. And rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next week,
may the eyes of the ranger be upon you.
When your Texas look behind you,
oh, 'cause that's where the ranger's gonna be.